Episode 85, Fort Sumter. The American Civil War begins. Hi, my name is Clayton Mills. Welcome to A Short Walk Through Our Long History, a podcast where we look at the events of history and examine how those events shaped our modern world. Well, here we are. Right at the brink of disaster. Things are about to get really busy. The United States is about to begin a unique and very bloody war. It's unique in that it was kind of the last major war that was in that transition phase from old colonial warfare weapons and strategies to new modern weapons and strategies. It's a bit of both. But it will start off in the much more colonial old style. But it's going to end up with ironclad ships, machine guns, revolvers, aerial reconnaissance, and total war. We'll get to all that as we go. Last episode, I mentioned that even before Lincoln was inaugurated as president, there were places in the South where there were forts that were controlled by troops that were federal or Union troops. The U.S. Army had forts in several key places in the South. In some of those places, the commanders and the troops were actually Northerners, so their allegiance was much more to the federal government than it was to the locals. We're going to get to the really well-known example of this, Fort Sumter, in a moment, but there were other forts as well. I bet you didn't know that Fort Sumter wasn't the first Union fort that was attacked by the South, did you? I didn't know that either until I started researching this episode. In Alabama, there was an important fort called Fort Morgan, and that fort controlled the entrance to Mobile Bay, the main port of Alabama. 8 days before Alabama voted to secede, several hundred state militiamen captured Fort Morgan without casualties and without firing a shot, and they apparently let the U.S. Army soldiers go. So the first southern fort to be taken by the local militias wasn't Fort Sumter, it was Fort Morgan. But since shots weren't fired, it doesn't get the notoriety of being the start of the Civil War. So now let's jump over to Charleston, South Carolina, to another Union-held fort in a southern harbor. At the mouth of Charleston Harbor, there were two forts held by Union soldiers. One, Fort Moultrie, was on the northern edge of the harbor, and the other, Fort Sumter, was on an island in the middle of the harbor. The Union troops were actually headquartered in Fort Moultrie, which was a little bit bigger and newer. But all of the cannons in Fort Moultrie pointed out to sea, so it was more vulnerable to a land attack. After South Carolina seceded, which was on December 20th, they sent a delegation to Washington to demand that the forts be handed over to the newly independent state. But before that discussion could take place, on December 26th in the night, Union Commander Major Robert Anderson took all of his men out of Fort Moultrie and moved all 90 men into Fort Sumter, which would be easier to defend since it was an island. And this move set the conflict in motion. The people of Charleston were convinced that this move meant that the Union intended to keep the fort and possibly try to use it to close Charleston Harbor to ship traffic. Now, these fears were further confirmed when, on January 9th, just a few days later, a Union ship came to try to resupply Fort Sumter, whose supplies and food were apparently running low. A warning shot from the guns at Fort Moultrie convinced the supply ship to turn around, though. So that, in a way, was really the first shot of the Civil War. But since it was just sort of a warning shot and not really fired in anger and no one was hurt at all, no one was intended to be damaged by it, it doesn't really quite count. The standoff at the fort continued for several months as the militia around Charleston continued to grow. The militia grew so large that Jefferson Davis sent General P.G.T. Beauregard to Charleston to take command of the forces. And then, on April 4th, President Lincoln told the South Carolina delegation in Washington that he intended to try to resupply the fort, but only with food. The South Carolina delegation replied that any attempt to resupply the fort would be resisted by force if necessary. Later, Lincoln gave the order to go ahead and send the resupply ship, although it only carried food and water. On April 9th, with the approval of Jefferson Davis and his Confederate cabinet, Beauregard sent three men to the fort to request its immediate surrender. Rather ironically, the three men were met by a Union lieutenant who was named Jefferson Davis, though he had no relation to the Confederate president. Jefferson Davis took the three men to his commander, Major Anderson, and Beauregard's three envoys politely asked Anderson to surrender to the fort and offered him and his men safe passage. Major Anderson politely refused, and he also mentioned, in passing, that the garrison's supplies would probably run out within the week. Now, conceivably, at this point, General Beauregard and the Charleston militia could have just waited it out, and Anderson and the troops would have soon been forced to abandon the fort because they had no supplies. But where's the fun in that? No, let's send them Yanks a message! People on both sides were kind of itching for a fight anyway. So, at 4:30 a.m. on April 12th of 1861, the Confederate gunners at Fort Moultrie fired a flaming mortar shot into the air above Fort Sumter. This was the signal for all the batteries around the harbor to begin fire on Fort Sumter, and they all started shooting. So, shots fired. The Civil War had begun. The Union soldiers in the fort did not return fire until 7:30 that morning. They had only old-school iron cannonballs with no explosive fuses in them, so their return fire was not very effective, but it was symbolic. Interesting side note here, the Union soldier who fired the first Union shot was Colonel Abner Doubleday, who would go on later to become a Union general. Abner Doubleday is also widely known as the man who invented baseball, although that claim is somewhat dubious. Anyway, both sides were firing at each other now. The barrage went on, off and on, for 36 hours total, until at 2:30 in the afternoon the next day, April 13th, Major Anderson had his men pull down the American flag off of what was left of the flagpole. At that point, Fort Sumter was in flames, they were out of munitions, they were out of supplies, and there wasn't really much for them to do except surrender. The Southern batteries then ceased fire, and the Union soldiers were allowed to depart the island peacefully, and they eventually got on a ship that took them to New York City. No one was killed in the barrage. After the South Carolina militias took the fort, they celebrated by firing off a 100-gun salute, and one of the shells from this salute exploded prematurely, and it killed two militiamen. So they were the first casualties of the Civil War, but not the last. News of the battle spread rapidly across the entire United States. It was seen across the North as an act of rebellion, even more so than the secessions had been. The battle was seen across the South as a huge blow struck in favor of independence and states' rights, and it spurred on Southern patriotic fervor and also Southern militia enrollment. It was due to the loss of the fort that Lincoln then issued the call for an additional 75,000 new Union troops. And this call for more troops was what pushed the four border states of Virginia, North Carolina, Missouri, and Arkansas to decide to secede as well, rather than to be part of an effort to force the seceded states back into the Union. But in the rest of the North, men rushed to volunteer, partly because the initial enlistment period was only 90 days, and many people thought the war would be over that quickly. Just a little preview here. No, it's not going to be over that quickly. The Civil War is going to go on for 4 full years, from April of 1861 until April of 1865. There's a lot of reasons, though, that the tensions in the U.S. in 1861 exploded into an actual war. At the core of it were the twin problems of states' rights and slavery. The people in the North were mad that the Southern states would go into an active armed rebellion just to protect the institution of slavery. The Northerners thought that this was wrong and that the states had just tried to walk away, and they were willing to break up the United States over an issue that the North saw as a moral evil. And like Lincoln said, if slavery isn't wrong, then nothing is wrong. The people in the South, on the other hand, were angry about the North and the federal government meddling in their business and trying to coerce them to do something that they themselves did not want to do. But in the end, that thing that they didn't want to do was they didn't want to end slavery. In the end, it was mostly about protecting their way of life and not letting some outsiders tell them what they could and couldn't do, but it was about slavery. I'm just going to say here that if the South had just up and ended slavery in 1861, it would have ended up being a lot less expensive than going through a 4-year war. It would have cost a lot less lives, and honestly, the transition from slavery to post-slavery would have been a whole lot easier. And even if the South had gone on to win the war, which it won't, slavery was a doomed institution anyway. The Industrial Revolution was going to put an end to it one way or the other. And 600,000 men are about to die in battle. Cities will be burned, farms and plantations destroyed, and the whole country will be torn apart, leaving wounds and animosities that we still deal with today. They could have just up and ended it, and it would have been less trouble. And here's one more thing that is also a real loss. The Civil War, which was largely fought over states' rights, is going to be the cause of massive centralization of power in the federal government and a huge undercutting of states' rights ever after. The federal government comes out of the Civil War bigger, more influential, and more powerful than ever. And that's just not a good thing. Because as I've said before in this podcast, power corrupts. And a big, entrenched, powerful federal government without the check of state sovereignty is only going to try to grow more and more powerful and thus more and more corrupt. Case in point, the Biden administration. One way to destroy a country is to secede from it over an issue that was clearly as wrong as slavery. But another way to destroy a country is to have a corrupt federal government. One that does things like encouraging human trafficking along the southern border, sending trillions of dollars overseas where all the money just vanishes with no tangible return on investment at all, and having a government whose every policy seems to be aiming to try to wreck the economy and divide society. All of this is happening today because the federal government is huge and powerful and unaccountable and deeply corrupt. And the seeds of this were sown back in 1861 when the militia of South Carolina fired on Fort Sumter. And we began a journey that would end with a Union victory and a much more powerful federal government. So Fort Sumter was where the first shots were fired. But next episode, we'll get to the first real battles of the war. Join me next episode when we go up to Manassas, Virginia, for the first Battle of Bull Run, where we will meet one of my other contenders for the coolest nickname of all time, Stonewall Jackson.